Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, our audience and panelists, depending on where you are. Welcome to our session titled, How Web3 is Restructuring Value for Forestry and Agricultural Land Owners and Stewards. I'm only a series of talks in the format of podcast episodes, offering perspectives at the nexus of philanthropy, investments, and innovation. Collaboration with Catalyst 2030, a World Economic Forum initiative, a network comprising leading social enterprises, intermediaries, and funders. We're very excited to have today's session with a number of exceptional stars in the ReadWhy space. Now, for those of you who tuned to our previous sessions, we considered various forms of funds available for nature-based solutions. We considered carbon credits as a tool to adapt and mitigate the impact of climate change, support natural ecosystems, and unlock much-needed cash for owners and stewards of these nature-based solutions. Today, we will zoom in on Web3 innovations to further uncover how these innovations unlock new funds for nature-based solutions with a focus on forestry and farmland. Today's session, unlike all of our past episodes, brings together mavericks from the Web3 universe. These are individuals who really stood out to us with their thought-provoking, powerful, and extraordinary perspectives. Individuals who we do not believe are getting their fair share of spotlight. Instead of highlighting long bios, we'll leave it to them to introduce themselves. We're sure their perspectives will leave you thinking for a long time after this episode. But briefly, we have Charlotte, Chief Communication Officer from Forest. We have Ian, Web3 Partnerships Lead from Toucan Protocol. We have Mihai, the Product Lead from Carbon Base and Project Arc. And we have Robert, the Head of Growth from DClimate. So to kick off today's session, how does your organization support and or enable unlocking funds for forestry and agricultural landowners and stewards?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for the great introduction. My name's Ian. I work with Toucan Protocol. We provide the necessary infrastructure to allow carbon credits to exist on the off-chain world and bridge them into the on-chain world. And we do this with the idea of being able to scale climate action. And so the big way that Toucan achieves this is that as you bring carbon credits onto the blockchain, there's this idea that a lot of landowners and land stewards have a lot of challenging times developing carbon credits. There's a lot of barriers that exist for them to bring these into the space. You have to be quite a big size, and that's the only way you get the eyes of the validators. That's the only way you get really access to the financing. And Web3 is just this incredible vehicle that allows users to finance and look at these solutions that are really applicable to the bigger finance players. And exactly what I mean by that is there is tons of opportunities to use these carbon credits, use these impact assets as a way to finance smaller landowners and smaller land stewards with the idea of preserving the environment and making ecology, making biodiversity an asset in itself. So in its current form, you could take a carbon credit and actually pay a small landowner to the forward finances they would need to preserve their land, to do reforestation, to do things that are going to increase the carbon sequestration potential and the positive externalities that are attached to it. And you're going to be able to do that in a way where right now these landowners in a lot of places that don't have access to it are kind of left with an economic option, which is, what do I do with this land? If I leave it standing, I'm not able to capture the economic value. And if I cut it down, it's bad for my family and sets of lumber and creating farmlands, then we're destroying and degrading the environment. So Web3 is this really unique vehicle that allows us to actually finance these subjects and really put the economic value back in the hands of the land stewards.
Thank you for having me. I'm Charlotte, and I am the communication officer of Forest. We aim to close the gap between the real world and the digital world by supplying metaverses with sustainable real-world link NFTs and creating a CO2 token market. And we have a decentralized ecosystem for real-world linked NFTs and carbon emission offsetting. And this platform helps to reduce CO2 emissions. But also what's very important is for us is to improve livelihoods and even protect wildlife. We believe that in this business and in this current market, farmers, like Ian said, have problems to get on that carbon train. We want to give them the possibilities just with having a telephone or an internet connection that they can engage into this carbon market, and that we cut out that middleman, and the funds that we can unlock are only for them. So they can invest in your project and invest in their livelihoods. So, and what we have done is, in order to combine those two, so Web3 technology and the real world, is that we have NFTs, we call them NFTs, linked to real trees in real life. So that gives us the most transparency possible, and that we can track all the CO2. And with Web3, give that extra transparency.
Very nice. And thank you very much for inviting me as part of this exceptional panel. My name is Mikhail Krimiuk. I'm a co-founding team of Project ARC and currently leading the efforts from the European side of things. Project ARC is a blockchain startup that uses the power of NFTs and infrastructure to build funding mechanisms for climate change solutions. NFTs present a certificate of ownership on the blockchain that certain asset belongs to you. It can come in the form of a website domain, an image, and even an animation or video that represents a portion of forest. The way I was thinking about NFTs, for people that don't understand it, is very similar to thinking about, let's say, the big trademarks of McDonald's. You basically can use that as an image, but it can become very easily a copyright infringement problem. That's very similar to the pick of the actual NFT, but it doesn't represent that it's yours. For the nature-based solutions category, do it through two ways. One is called Retoracle. It's a product that we are building it for the alpha stage, where basically for each dollar that it's spent for retiring carbon credits, you receive a token, which you can then spend it for digital metaverse goods. So basically, we're building on top of what's already out there. So like, even kind of, we're collaborating with them on this perspective. And then we're very much in the realm of thinking how we can reward more behavior, like retiring carbon credits. And two, we're pioneering reverse reserve to earn model with some actors from Suriname, which is the greenest country on earth at the level of a number of people inhabiting the country. And over there, we're going to embed active carbon credits into NFTs in the form of land, such that in the future, once the carbon credit is recognized, it can actually become a valuable asset to be sold to interested parties.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Waheed, for having me. And it's a pleasure to be on this panel. Just for some background, my name is Robbie. I am the head of growth at dClimate. As a short primer on what we do, we are a decentralized climate information network that aims to bring better availability, accountability, and accessibility to the climate data ecosystem globally. We came out of another company called Arbol, which helps businesses around the world that are affected by weather and climate build financial resilience against these risks through financial products like insurance, derivatives, and reinsurance. And in building a platform that makes data-driven insurance accessible globally, we realized that there were a ton of problems that make it difficult for communities, governments, businesses to unlock the data that they need in order to plan around climate events, and then to build meaningful climate resilience applications like insurance, but thinking beyond that to critical infrastructure for scaling carbon markets. These problems include costs. So climate data that is institutional grade can be extremely expensive. The formats that they come in, the data can often be very raw and not in a format that is workable for people who don't have professional data science engineering experience. And then you have issues with being able to access the types of data and the formats of the data that you need. And so we rolled our internal data infrastructure into an open, user-friendly, almost iTunes-like marketplace so that people can easily find all the data that they need on variables like soil moisture, carbon, rainfall, temperature, and beyond that to either get or share data and then use that to build resilience applications and infrastructure for building climate resilience in our communities and around the world. And how that gets into financing for nature-based solutions. One of the big problems that we identified in the early days of building our marketplace was that there was a lack of infrastructure for monetizing natural assets like carbon without carbon and forests without destroying them. And in working with some of our major partners in Central Africa, one of the big problems that we ran into was that there was a lack of data, a lack of data granularity, and a lack of data quality. And so one of the big initiatives is a DMRV, so digital monitoring, reporting, and verification platform called Cyclops that enables forestry projects and farmers to plug in the coordinates of a project so that they can estimate variables like carbon sequestration and biodiversity so that they can begin to unlock capital and flow that into projects that are truly nature-based so that they can generate instruments like carbon credits. Ultimately, what we want to do is build data infrastructure so that it is easier to finance nature-based projects that are tied to solving root causes of climate change like deforestation. Because ultimately, if we don't tackle preservation projects and root causes of climate change like deforestation, we lose the battle entirely. So really looking forward to the conversation and thank you again for having me.
Now, as all of our panelists highlighted, there are a lot of barriers, especially from a supply perspective, to access carbon financing. Challenges start from selecting the right carbon registry, selecting the right pre-approved methodology, creating the product design document, all the way to opening a registry account, getting your project validated, hiring the right auditor and DDB, going through the MRV process. It is generally a time-consuming, a relatively expensive, and complex process. So my next question for the panelists is, how are technological enablers from Web3 Ventures to remote sensing and satellite imagery removing barriers to unlock funds for forestry and farmland owners and stewards?
So the big way I see the Web3 Ventures tackling this is on two fronts. One was I had mentioned previously, and one that Robbie was touching on with the DMRV. So I think the big catalyst that we see with Web3 is that due to the types of participants, the size of the credits you're allowed to have. And in Web3, this is one of the first times that retail investors and small investors can really own carbon credits and hold on to them. And with that, they have this option to be able to fund very small projects that, as we were just talking about, wouldn't really be advantageous enough for the current registries and the current financier environment. Web3 and the tools that we have, really small landowners can actually find funding with the type of environment that Web3 offers, where landowners could offer a handful of credits to go finance a project. These land stewards can be the majority value captures of these projects, instead of right now where the current environment goes, usually the brokers are the winners of the carbon credit environment. And so that's one barrier it removes. It really puts the value back into the hands of the people and allows financing options for those who are kind of currently priced out of the market. And the second big piece that I see that's really exciting about unlocking funds to nature-based solutions is around the DMRV environment, which is by using a satellite imagery, by using other techniques of the Internet of Things, we're really able to get a more accurate measurement of what is the carbon sequestration potential of certain areas without requiring the expensive sort of validation and verification bodies that kind of currently exist in the current market that will go put the methodology in, go to the land, actually investigate that. That big part, which is pretty extensive, can be removed. And that can be done through this new technology layer. And what's really exciting to me where this goes is that in the current dynamic, we've injected carbon into the cost structure of these companies. So these companies really care about carbon, because there's a cost benefit to it. If you're on the compliance market, you legally have to reduce your emissions or you'll get a fine. And in the voluntary market and the companies that are doing that, you often see the company C-suite having their enumeration pays attached to certain carbon outcomes. Everything's a part of the cost structure. Now look at all these places of land, all these forces that are currently intact, and look at them as assets in the form of these reduced carbon over a certain amount of time, or there's a lot of other projects that are trying to embed positive externalities like the social development goals by the UN into their analysis. And with this, we've done this amazing transition from looking at carbon as an instrument to reduce costs and to avoid liability into an actual asset class itself, which would give people the reason to come and own it. And if we can develop the model and develop right design so that a tree is worth more valuable standing up and getting cut down, we're drastically going to change the incentive system that currently exists, which is driving the climate crisis in its current form. So those to me are the big catalysts we see here. Giving the financing, on like giving the people on the ground, the land stewards, the actual value capture, giving them the financing, but then also changing our way we look at biodiversity and ecosystem services, which right now is the main balance we fight is against an incentive system and wanting to save the environment. And if we can get them together, the climate crisis is definitely going to be something we're going to hopefully get a better hold of.
Totally agree with you. And I think the most important thing is transparency. All the tools that we can use via Web3 gives us the transparency we all know about greenwashing and double counting. And in order to give people that invest the trust that they are investing in projects, they're actually there, that it's of a high quality, that it's not used twice. And that's so also so cool for the satellite data that can be used, that directly gives you a possibility to see live if that project is actually there. And all the data that we can get from measuring the CO2 that is reduced by that specific, say, tree, and even going deep down into the soil to see where that's, where the compensation and reduction of the CO2 happens there. So much more to this. I think that Web3, we are just in the beginning, and it can be that the usage is going to be so amazing that we can definitely contribute to a better world.
I want us to take a step back and look at the status quo of our current carbon registries. Only recently in the past couple of years, forests have been more put forward in terms of a solution. And as Ian was saying, taking care of what we actually have, because there's very little of it, if we're not careful. So the current carbon registries, what they're doing is if they monitor forests that are on the verge of being cut and being offered for carbon credits such that they don't do that and they don't log. Currently, in order to verify that the forest is still there, the verification is only done once per year, once every 2 years, or even more. So you could actually purchase carbon credits of a protected area of the forest from the Amazon and then realize 300 days later that part of the forest doesn't even exist anymore. What does the Web3 very concretely offers? And we have a partnership to put that under a form of dynamic NFTs. So you imagine that you have a representation of a forest in the form of a very attractive visual plot of land. And the data that is being gathered from the ground with the help of drones is being updated on a weekly basis or even if every 2 weeks. Based on the data on the ground that is gathered, if the forest is not there anymore, you will see from the updated NFT if the forest is still there, fresh growing, or logging is happening, in which case the state of the NFT will deteriorate. So this is just one of the creative tools that we're trying to use to make things more exciting and more attractive, because as much as we think we care about the planet, the current opportunities are quite sort of vanilla. And Web3 just offers a lot of space and creativity to come up with this sort of solutions.
That was such a terrific point about the need to protect what we have before we can think about growing more. And so that's kind of one of the key value propositions that we see with Web3 is the ability to introduce ongoing auditable verification that is tied to metrics like prevented deforestation. And so we have the ability to incorporate publicly verifiable satellite images from places like the European Space Agency, to Sentinel-1, Sentinel-2 data, combined with machine learning algorithms and AI, so that you can create a very competitive and accurate model of what is going on in a region without needing ground data. So one of the problems that we are currently seeing is that the vast majority of the fundings, upwards of 85 to 90% of funding for nature-based solutions is coming from G20 wealthier countries, but is mostly being spent on domestic initiatives. Not a lot of this funding is going towards initiatives in regions that are either uniquely at risk or that lack funding at scale. And so preserving existing ecosystems that are uniquely at risk needs to be the priority. If we look at the last couple hundred years, deforestation has removed over 1.5 billion hectares of forest, which is an area essentially 1.5 times the size of the United States. And so we look a lot at the Congo Basin, which has been the spotlight the last couple of months because of the oil block auctions. And one of the big barriers that exists right now to moving alternative capital, so non-oil capital, towards this region for nature-based solutions is auditable and data-driven DMRV that can give you a snapshot of what carbon sequestration, both historical and predicted, looks like, what biodiversity looks like. One of the major problems with the registries, as well-intentioned as they are, is that they aren't able to operate in many of these uniquely at-risk, old-growth, tropical rainforest regions because they lack the manual verification tools and because they rely on a manual process that takes 5, sometimes upwards of 10 years to verify projects and bring them to market. Unfortunately, when we're talking about prevented deforestation credits and prevented deforestation initiatives, we simply don't have that kind of time. And Web3 offers the ability to act with a greater sense of urgency using technology and models that enables us to verify these projects almost immediately and then to do periodic monitoring, ongoing monitoring, so that if biomass is lost, if a forest is cut down, we can update the NFTs or whatever the unique instrument is, so that is reflected in the actual offset. So Web3 is not only creating a new way to align incentives and inject capital into nature-based solutions in regions where capital is needed most urgently, but it's also creating a way to generate offsets that are truly accountable and that prevent greenwashing in a way that will be truly transformative for this industry once the tech and once the incentives are truly aligned.
Now, for the next question, since we highlighted some of the barriers from a supply perspective to generating carbon credits on the income of standard setting bodies, I'm keen to explore what are some of the alternatives that exist when it comes to voluntary carbon credits by the incumbent standard setting bodies that some would argue are excluding the smaller project owners, in this particular case, the forest owners and the farmers. What are some interesting innovations that you're seeing in this space? And most importantly, how is your organization positioned in this wider ecosystem?
I think a couple of what the panelists are working on with their own projects and what Toucan is assisting with as well are a lot of these really exciting alternative mechanisms. And so the initial ones you could think of are kind of a very traditional NFT, sort of using this as a fundraising mechanism. So you're selling some sort of product within the NFT and using either what you call the minting revenue, which is what it would cost to create those NFTs, or using secondary market sales. So when people are trading back and forth, and then using those funds initially to fund some sort of conservation activity or buy up carbon credits and offset its activities through that. I see that as a really intuitive approach where we're using kind of already the tools that currently exist today to drive that funding. One thing that Toucan is working on really closely, and I mentioned at the very beginning, is these, what we're calling forward financing. So really taking carbon credits that exist today, looking out into the marketplace on landowners and smaller players who don't have access to current financing options and providing them directly with financing opportunities through the power of Web3 and being able to give them these financing so that they can actually develop their land in a way that sequesters additional carbon, has some sort of additionality to it, which is the idea that without this mechanism in place or without this activity like planting new trees or doing forestation, we wouldn't capture additional carbon. The point I bring that up with is because a lot of the conversation we're talking about too is about preserving these traditional forests. And in the kind of current environment in the voluntary carbon market, there's less of a premium held on forests that already exist that we're not going to cut down or are preserved and aren't as in danger. However, these are still public goods and have some of the positive externalities for people, and we don't properly value them. And so there is these mechanisms like forward financing, like ways of doing this NFT fundraising to actually give value to those types of people as well, not only the ones that have additionality to it. And then, as I said, I believe kind of in the future where a lot of this positive benefits are going is using things like DMRV, satellite imagery, and Internet of Things to really change the way we perceive
a forest and change the way we receive power and things into moving them into assets. And then when those communities and landowners who own the forest now own a forest that is full of assets where they could put that on their balance sheet, that insurance would underwrite it, that financiers would look at it as an asset class and be able to put money against it as well. And this would allow the landholders and the farmers to capture the majority of the value. And in the current environment, we really, in a carbon credit world, we're creating carbon credits for polluters to allow them to keep polluting. And if we allow all these different mechanisms for that farmers to capture value, even moving into other Web3 novel ideas like decentralized finance and allowing people to collateralize though these impact assets, if you will, these trees or their carbon credits, they are able to extract value and create liquidity from those assets themselves without relying on an end party who's needing these to continue their polluting operations. And so these mechanisms are across the board from NFTs to forward financing to rewriting value are very instrumental instruments in actually trying to bring the climate crisis down and move into climate mitigation and adaptation while allowing these land stewards and farmers to be the value captures, which currently they're pushed out of the financing and verification process, or even if they aren't part of it, often are not the winners relative to the brokers who get to capture the majority of the value.
I want to reference the collaborative matter that we find ourselves in the Web3 space, and more importantly, the way in which ReFi organizations are collaborating even more. The way I think of the space is bringing new and alternative ways for carbon credit funding to build the next stack of products that can be built on top of each other. So in our case with Project Arc, we have built the credit protocol to take advantage of what other actors are already working on, including Toucan, including Solid World, and other actors that are already putting the funding into the small project owners, NGO developers, and people that don't have the money and the resources to go to the classic sort of registries. So the platform will allow this sort of projects to be onboarded such that they allow for more visibility, so to speak, and then also reward the buyers. Because one aspect of the current state of affairs is that once you retire carbon credit, you receive a PDF. It's like you've been part of a race and you receive a diploma of participation. That's it. Nothing exciting happens afterwards. And what the power of NFTs are doing is to create a bit more excitement in this part. So if in the case of Credit Protocol as a product, we're putting forth a platform for not only project developers and projects in the ReFi space that are already working on this to put their projects onto the platform for visibility, but also for people who retire carbon credits to be rewarded and use tokens to participate in the digital metaverse. The second part of what we're doing is to create a methodology in collaboration with actors in Suriname, as I was saying before, and basically make the model of deserving to earn more attractive, not only from an investor perspective, but also from a very visual representation such that it makes things even more creative for companies that are purchasing these carbon credits or for individuals. Because in a sense, the current market stands at around 1 billion. In order to actually make a dent into the current state of affairs, we need to raise it 100x. In all the collaboration perspective, the fact that we bring other actors and enable them to put forth their solution and make things very exciting, I think are the ingredients to actually challenge the status quo, come with a better model, and change things for the better.
So I think Ian made a really important point earlier, which was forward markets and forward financing for carbon credits. If you don't have upfront capital to unlock nature-based solutions, a lot of these projects are not going to be able to get off the ground. So we've seen projects in the space like Solid World DAO, who are doing really exciting things around forward financing, start to think about how we inject financing into nature-based solutions so that they can get off the ground. And in my personal opinion, I do think that forward markets in 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it is, will be bigger than the VCM in its entirety, because ultimately you're going to need to either pre-purchase credits or you're going to need to have a lot of that financing up front so that you can get infrastructure in place, especially for projects that are operating at much larger scale. And then the second point that's really important is the idea of alternative scalable methodologies to the incumbent system that's put forward by the Veras and the gold standards of the world. Ultimately, we need methodologies that are built to verify and generate credit almost instantaneously. And so this is, again, using a combination of the MRV tools that can rely on a combination of satellite imagery and AI and machine learning technology, and then some combination of ground data, above ground biomass data in regions where that's possible. So this enables us to look at forestry projects and be able to generate those credits natively on the blockchain without going through central registries so that you can inject more financing into those nature-based initiatives. And that's what truly excites me, because while Vera and Gold Standard have done a ton of great work to date, we do ultimately need to move much faster when we're talking about projects that are dealing with prevented deforestation, reforestation, afforestation, so that you can move capital towards those projects and so that you can do the verification and monitoring in a much more transparent and scalable manner. So we've seen, again, projects who we work closely with doing a lot of great work to democratize the way the data is collected and be projects that have access to capital and to the blockchain in and of itself. And then in terms of what we're doing, as I mentioned earlier, our platform Cyclops can ultimately not just enable the projects that we're working on personally, but so that we can create an easy platform for any forestry project in the world, whether that's for individual smallholder farmers or a large corporation or national government, to input the coordinates of their project and be able to pull those essential variables on carbon sequestration and biodiversity so that they can then have a data infrastructure baseline for creating a nature-based solution project. So that's what I'm really excited about. There are other pioneers in the ReFi space who are working on DMRV, either using a combination of satellite imagery and ground truth or something in between. And I think that with all the action that's happening in this space and in the traditional sustainability world, we will have the tools in the next couple of years in order to move much more financing from much more developed countries to the global south and a lot of regions that are uniquely at risk and that need the capital in order to work on some really important issues.
Robbie, you highlighted a very important point. And before going to the next question, I just want to expand on that a bit. You highlighted scalable pre-approved methodologies, which is a fantastic area to look at. So one of the major pain points that you have when you have access to land and you want to develop carbon projects is finding the right nature-based solutions consultants, the right scientists that can create project design documentation for you and support in the project development efforts. You have guys like Open Forest Particle are naturally streamlining this process and automating the process significantly, making it very intuitive. You have other platforms that are doing a phenomenal job for smallholder farmers and are streamlining the process over there. Stealth AgriFin Venture that I'm advisor to is streamlining and automating the process of aggregating smallholder farmers and the process of creating a project design document. So I think this is a fantastic space that definitely needs a lot of disruption. I'm personally feeling the pain right now. So we are developing carbon projects in Africa, focusing on forestry projects. And it's definitely a major pain point. And I'm glad that you highlighted that because it is an area that is ripe for disruption. So very keen to go to my final question. With everything that we discussed today, how should forestry and farmland owners and stewards currently seeking funds for the sustainable path going forward? Let me phrase this in a different way. What are your final words of wisdom to our audience who are land owners or stewards?
We've worked with a ton of businesses throughout the world, going back to the arable side of things, and then now with BeClimate, ranging from smallholder farmers who invest in regenerative agriculture practices to much larger corporations on the utility side, on the renewable energy side. And they all have a very similar problem in that they have massive financial exposure to weather and climate risk, and they all need better access to data for operational logistical efficiency for operating in this world that we live in. And so my final words of wisdom are, if you need data or have data to share that can help move projects in the nature-based space along, please reach out to us. We would love to help bring that data out into the open so that other people can utilize that. If you need TMRV for getting a forestry project off the ground, please reach out to us. This is an area where we can help at DCLIMATE and where we can provide data tools for potentially making it easier to either monetize those projects or to actually have the data to support the underlying initiative. And then the final piece is for developing methodologies and for looking at verification for nature-based solutions. These ultimately start as data problems. And when we have data that is auditable, that is out into the open, and that anyone can certify and look at, and that is ultimately transparent, it makes it much easier to scale nature-based financing because there is much more trust in the underlying assets that are being brought to market. And there is more participants who are actually involved in the creation of those assets. And so with what we built, we've essentially said, we have this model, but if you have a better data set, if you have a better way of doing this, please come along and take a look at what we have. And we want to make sure that we have the best model possible. And so my final words of wisdom are, if you have a need for DMRV, for data, or you have data that you want to share with the world, please reach out to us. We do want to help. And we want to make sure that we can funnel as much capital as possible towards nature-based projects that are looking to make a real impact in the world, especially when it comes to saving and preserving the ecosystems that are left on Earth that help us all live the lives that we live today.
My final words of wisdom is, do your research. Carbon compensation is a hot topic at this moment, which means that everyone has a piece of that. Our clients are looking into a big web of possibilities, helping them solve their carbon compensation problems. And that is exactly what we want to pinpoint with Chorus, is that we have a simple, transparent, and easy onboard platform. We find it very, very important that we use all the data that we have from our partners. We have satellite data. We have other projects that give the data of a specific area. So we can really map everything. The key in this is that Chorus is not the only solution. We need to unite with all the projects out there that have the same goal, that have the same life mission to fight the climate change. And that's why I'm so happy to have this panel, that we have a lot of different perspectives, a lot of amazing visions. And if we combine together, I think we have a good shot of creating a better world.
I want to emphasize just one word, honesty. I think looking at the ecosystem and how fragile it is, especially in the Web3 and regenerative finance space, where we're trying to bring basically a lot of innovation at a very fast speed and also build credibility. I think it's always going to be a challenge to make sure that all these elements are ticked. So of course, there are going to be a lot of incentive structures, a lot of tools to make sure that the process is as easy as possible and is easy to access funds for the projects on the ground. But, and this is a big but, if there's no honesty and the intent of people working hard on the ground is to be there in it for the money, I don't think that way can actually work. As Robbie was saying this, and Charlotte, this is not a couple months thing. This is a very long-term path that we can find ourselves in. And if the honesty is there from the beginning and trust that can be established from both sides, I think it's in all best advantage. To finish with the call to action, we're very much reaching out an official launch for the Credit Protocol product. So if you want to find out more, please follow us on Twitter, looking for Credit for Climate handle, to make sure that you get all the updates. And as Charlotte was saying, we will make sure that the front is united. We'll collaborate as much as possible on the multi-stack of solutions and make sure that not only a few people can participate in it, but it can also be brought into massive scale. Thank you.
My closing remarks, I would just want to say I agree with the opinions here at the end about be honest and doing your research and really exploring these technologies. And I think how I would frame great next steps to take is really, it is a combination of the three, which is like really explore these current innovations going on right now. This space is moving so quick with so many brilliant people working in it, with so many novel solutions, and everyone's still trying to figure out what's going to be the right one and who's going to win this from just an adoption standpoint. So I think if you can take your time, really investigate this space, if you're a landowner and farmer, and you really want to create some value from your land in the form of carbon sequestration, you know, the traditional registries like the VR and gold standards of the world. And as Robbie pointed out, we stand on the shoulders of giants here, and they've guided us a far away here, but we're ready to take the next steps and move and accelerate even further. So I'd say really dive in to what these protocols are offering. What are these really new innovative ways that you can finance your carbon projects, ways that you can extract value from your land by preserving it? And that's exploring certain methodologies. That's, in my opinion, studying things like governance structures and how in current today's society, how governance structures play a part into who gets to extract value. If you do follow the Web3 space, there's a large talk about how one of the things that Web3 solves is coordination issues, and climate change is one of our biggest coordination failures. And so really studying how governance operates will put you in a place to understand how you can benefit from these systems. And if I can give you specifics on what to do, I'd say really study things like alternative economic structures from like cooperatives, and study capitalism, study social, study the array of the way we've organized and learn how those play in parts of this. And then I'd say, if you want to be able to navigate this space on your own, take your time to study a little bit of some programming languages that are used to build these infrastructure, like Solidity, which is used for a lot of popular EVM, Ethereum virtual machine blockchains, or Rust, which is used for a lot of other popular blockchains. And this will give you the tools yourself to investigate how these things are going to move value around, how you'll be able to make money from these things, and also how you can preserve your land at the same time. These will be valuable skill sets into navigating the space really effectively. So I'd say, just from a very high level, do your research. And then from trickling down from that, really understand the nuances of when we talk about how landowners will get to win, will be through governance structures, and then the tools that that goes through, which is the technology layer as well. So if you can look at those things, that will put you in a great position to navigate this space really effectively and come to the solution that's going to be best for you and your community.
This has been a phenomenal session. I would like to thank our speakers. I would like to thank the support team, our partners, Catalyst 2030, and of course, our audience. We hope that this session was informative, offered you some unique perspectives, and got you closer to action to develop your own projects and or unlock carbon financing using some of the Web3 innovative channels that are out there. We're very keen to having you with us in our next session titled Leveraging Innovative and Blended Finance to Tackle Climate Change with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugee Environmental Fund, with the United Nations Capital Development Fund, COIS, and our friends at The Climate. Thank you very much for being here with us.